Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD attention coach, Jeff Copper. And tonight we're going to talk about ADHD kids struggling with social cues and clues. With us tonight in our virtual studio is Caroline McGuire. Tonight is Wednesday, July the 20th in the year 2016 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A few announcements real quickly. The annual CHAD conference is coming up. It's November the 10th through the 12th in Costa Mesa, California. We're big CHAD supporters, and we like the fact that they support us. This is one of those things that if you're anywhere near that area, we've got the money you need to go there, just because there's nothing like a CHAD conference to catch up with your tribe and learn more. In fact, CHAD is actually bringing tonight's show to you. A little plug for them real quick, and we'll get on with our interview.
Did you know that more than 3,000 people died in distracted driving accidents last year? As a driver with ADHD, you're at higher risk for distracted driving and car accidents, particularly during long distance and highway driving. Here are some tips. Keep your cell phone turned off or out of reach. Limit the number of passengers. Use music or a book on tape to help you focus. Receive proper treatment. For more information, visit the CHAD website, chad.org, or helpforadhd.org. That's chadd.org, or help4adhd.org.
All right, everybody. Well, thank again for CHAD for sponsoring our show tonight and for advocating on behalf of those with ADHD. Again, tonight our topic is ADHD kids struggling with social clues and cues. And Caroline McGuire is with us. She's a certified professional personal coach for children and with ADHD and their families. Her revolutionary coaching program teaches executive functioning skills to children, teens, and young adults. She holds a master's degree in education with an emphasis in early childhood development. She's a speaker at worldwide venues. She's a former coach at the Hallowell Center in Sudbury, Massachusetts, where she was the main coach for children and teenagers in a co-led social skills program. She is the author of a new book that's going to be released next year called Why Will No One Play With Me? The book will show parents how to help kids with their social challenges arising from ADHD and executive function. To learn more about Caroline, go to NE, that stands for NewEnglandCoaching.com. And so, Caroline, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Jeff. I appreciate you having me on.
You know, it's pretty, you know, for our regular listeners out there, they're like, what's going on? He's reading her bio and he's reading it fast. And actually, he got most of it right. Well, that's because it's Caroline, our sometimes guest host, sometimes co-host, and sometimes just plain old guest. And I read her bio so many times, my dyslexia doesn't get in the way. So how about that, Caroline? Practice makes perfect, right? I can memorize it and just reel it off.
My daughter's preschool teacher used to say, practice makes better, which I love because really I never kind of get to perfect. But, you know, you did great, and it's what the brain does, right? Repetition is great.
Yep. That's right. That's right. So this has been fascinating to me. I first started just kind of learning about social anxiety, social challenges and stuff a couple years ago. And I've been learning more and more about it, and it's been fascinating to me to realize that social issues often accompany accompany the diagnosis of ADHD. And some people don't have problems with it, some do. I guess, Caroline, let's start off and talk out what when it comes to social issues and social anxiety, and we're going to talk about struggling with picking up clues. What is that? What is that all about? What, describe that to us.
So I'll step back and give you some information. So all social skills are driven by executive function, okay, the brain's management system. And that's partly because executive function is sort of how your brain's manager comes together and everything works, and it helps to with attention. It helps with self-regulation. And, you know, one of the great definitions of executive functions is that you have to have a goal, put an action plan in place for the goal, and then here's the key that's hard for us, self-regulate toward that goal. Well, part of that self-regulation that affects social skills so much is emotional regulation. Another piece of the self-regulation that people aren't as aware of, and that you know I'm kind of passionate about, is this idea that you are able to interpret social cues and that that's how your brain works, that your brain is sort of on about that. And that's all driven by executive function. So it really is amazing because it's all part of this management system of the brain, and there's things that we do well, and that's great, and then there's things that we don't do as well, and it's all driven by executive function, and there really is no one-size-fits-all. So part of why I'm passionate about this is I think people have a perception of what causes social skills issues or what they are, and, you know, often it's more complicated than that.
Well, this notion of a goal with an action plan and struggle with self-regulation and moving forward. We did several interviews with Dr. Barkley, and he talks so much about ADD as being a self-regulation issue. And he talks about it, the definition of self-regulation is an action that you direct back on yourself to change the behavior, to change the future. It's a future-directed act. And part of that need to be able to pause and direct an action back on yourself is to be able to pick up what's going on in your environment to redirect in the right way. So to me, this is executive functioning central. And if you are having a hard time regulating your attention, in other words, actually, if you're bouncing all over the place, you're having a hard time picking up those clues and you're missing the boat a lot of times. And when you do, you react emotionally, if you will, or somebody else makes emotion, and it kind of creates a problem. So I totally see how this is a real big issue. And more I know we're looking at ADHD as a self-regulation issue, which means you have to regulate your attention and your emotions at the same time. And with that being said, with the way you describe it, these become very intertwined and very, very complicated. At least that's my guess.
I mean, think about it this way, and those of you who have kids who struggle socially out there in the audience, this will make total sense to you. You know, part of what happens in our attention, driven by executive function, is we have sort of external stimuli, and then we have internal stimuli. And for a lot of our kids, and this is where I say it's kind of misunderstood, they have these sort of internal drivers, right? And they're like mind magnets. And it can be Pokemon, and it can be scavenger hunt, or it can be, the whole Minecraft thing, or it can be dinosaurs. And or it can be a social issue, right? I have many kids fail tests because they're thinking about a social issue. And what happens is, it's like, can you pay attention to the external world well enough and sort of self-regulate those internal magnets, right? And so there's a bunch of complicated issues. And so when people say, oh, it's attention, I feel like it's just an oversimplification because there's this sort of misnomer out there that, you know, social skills and ADHD are caused by impulsive kids who, you know, are too silly and goofy. But it's more than that. And I think if you're looking at it and if you're a parent and you're trying to figure this out, you know, one of my sort of things, and I can't show you a diagram, but I have a diagram I use in presentations, and it's sort of like, is a kid experiencing, attention that is, you know, impulsivity is sort of the underlying cause of their social issues? And you can just observe, watch some play dates, watch them in groups, or is it on the other prong more about this sort of social reading of cues where they're unable to maybe ignore these mind magnets and they're sort of not interpreting social cues. It almost doesn't matter in a way because either way you have to help the kid, but it does matter in the sense that, you know, if I just need to pause to pay attention to a cue, it's different than if I just don't notice the cue no matter what.
As you're describing this, I'm kind of getting off topic a little bit, but I'm not that far. But the way you described it is one is the ability to pause, and the other one is the ability to actually notice kind of what's going on. If you stop and you don't recognize it, you're not necessarily going to see it. And Kellen, I interviewed Autumn Zitani from Sesame Street. She oversees all the curriculum for the TV show, the website, the app, a YouTube channel, and everything. And in season 43, they started paying attention to self-regulation, executive functioning. And one of the things that stood out to me is in the shows, they did a lot of describing emotional situations and trying to put a word or label an emotion, and so for the kids to actually begin to recognize it, because in the absence of labeling it and noticing, they're oblivious to it, so that one is they'd actually be able to pause, but able two, they would actually be able to recognize it. And I feel that kind of speaks to what you're talking about. It's just not pausing, but either noticing it, being able to identify it or categorize it before you do something with it. Is that in line with what you're saying?
It's absolutely in line. So let me give you an example. When you walk into a room, right, an office, a school room, cafeteria, you do what we call read the room. And this is all about something called theory of mind. And it's the ability to interpret social cues, tone, and the mood of the room and what people are doing and talking about. But it's also the ability to understand that my actions affect you, and therefore you have feelings about my actions. And, you know, a lot of ADHD kids sort of bust into the room and they have, the self-regulation issues. But if I help them pause and I point things out and I do things like what I call social spy with them, where I ask them to look at these different things, they can peg them with no problem. But then there's other kids, and this is important as a parent, because if you're trying to figure out what's going on with the kid and you're saying to the kid over and over again, why can't you just pay attention to what people are feeling? Or my personal favorite that you know, people say that they mean well, but it's like, why don't you think before you speak? But if the kid goes into that same room and they don't have that theory of mind, they don't have that ability to interpret social cues, then they're not saying things because they're malicious that are sort of unexpected socially. They're not, you know, they're not trying, and they're not trying. But what's happening to them is they just don't get it. And so that's a whole different way that you have to approach it. People improve, they become a better version of themselves. It's totally doable. But you have to know that, because otherwise you're kind of making assumptions based on this idea that I feel like it's really prevalent, that it's all about self-regulation. And I think what Sesame Street's doing that I love, and actually, you know, I have little kids, and so we watch Sesame Street, and actually I've seen the effect of it. It's powerful. When Cookie Monster says, you know, I can't eat any more cookies, is that they, you know, I feel like the Sesame Street's trying to sort of name it to tame it, right? They're trying to give everything a name so that you can have that discussion, and then you can also help regulate the emotions. But my distinction here that I'm trying to make is really like, when you look at your kid or you look at your student, do you think that they're actually interpreting those social cues? Do you think they can adjust their behavior? We had Michelle Garcia Winner on this winter, and we've had some other guests who explain that, you know, that interpretation of social cues is really a big key factor here.
Yep, absolutely. Kellen, I tell you, we need to run to a break real quick and come back. I want to kind of pick up on this discussion and kind of move it forward. Parents can have a little working knowledge of what's going on. By the way, Caroline's schooled and students and parents and stuff like that, but a lot of what we're talking about really applies to adults. It's just, it's not Cookie Monster, it's your boss, if you will. So kind of keep that in mind. So to learn more about Caroline and what she's doing, go to necoaching.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio. The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today.
And now back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Caroline McGuire, and we're having a spirited conversation on social issues, social challenges, and those with ADHD being able to pick up on social clues and cues. It was interesting, before the break, Caroline, you were commenting on my Sesame Street comment about Sesame Street, and one of their big I forget what's the right word, their mantra, label, however, theme, whatever, of their season 43 when they did self-regulation was the cookie must have, me want cookie, me wait. And you made that comment, name it to tame it. And it was interesting to me because years ago I saw an article written by a game, Paul something, I don't remember his last name, about a game that he played with his kids called Social Charades. And my understanding is they were either autistic or ADHD, and it was like a charades game. But you would get up there and you would act out social cues, and people would try to guess it. And we're a little off talk. I want to kind of get back on. It's fascinating to me because I've been trying. I was chasing a guy down to try to do an interview with him, but it seems to me that falls in line with probably a lot of what you talk about in terms of training people, is a little bit of just helping people identify what to recognize. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's really important and why social charades and watching video clips and, watching different social scenarios where you go to Barnes & Noble and you observe and you're a social spy, one of the reasons it's really important is that if you don't have a good social awareness, right, if you are not possessed of that, then you don't have an image to navigate toward, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you tell me to, self-regulate myself, well, I have an image of what the behavior, the desired behavior is, the positive social behavior. But a lot of kids who are more socially blind and don't read social cues, they don't have that image. So you as a parent or a coach have to demonstrate that for them. And the demonstrating piece is really, really important. So role play, video clips, social charades. I have a game I play with kids called Good Winner and Good Loser, because if they can't self-regulate during a game, or if you're the person who, throws your golf clubs when you miss something, it's not expected. So we practice being a good winner and being a good loser. We play games. I bait them a little bit. I try to beat them, although some of these kids are smart. It's tough. And, what happens is they start to get a picture in their mind of what doesn't work, right, and what does work. Because once they have that visualization, now we can talk about it. They're more aware of their body signals, what it felt like. They've walked in those shoes, so to speak. And that way they can sort of work toward that image. if they don't have an image, they're not, you know, they don't have a picture in their head. They can't navigate toward that. So that's a huge piece of this that also parents should know, because I feel like it's one of those things, once you know, but as a parent, you know, it's really hard because, you know, unless you become, spend all your time, like people like me, worrying about this stuff, it's really hard to know all these nuances. So whenever you're asking a kid to perform a desired positive social behavior, the more you act it out or show them in some way, the better it is. And sometimes life hands you you know, some nice things where a kid will observe something and say, "Hey, Mom, look how that kid reacted. They weren't a good winner." And then you say, "Oh, God, that's what I'm trying to talk about."
Yep.
But a lot
yep.
of times you need to create that image.
So I want to just Kelly, we go after topics sometimes, and sometimes we get a little tangent, everybody, and we'll end up doing a sequel. And I think we're going to end up doing this today because this conversation is kind of bringing up a lot of stuff. And Caroline, you know, I'm all about paying attention to attention. And when it comes to communication, words are only a very small percentage of what communication is all about, maybe like 30% or something like that. Yet that's what we focus in on all the time is words. And I remember interviewing, I forget, was it, I think it was Michelle Garcia or who a while ago, about social attention. And that's the ability to pick up on body language and social cues. And I think it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's a little bit challenging sometimes. If you're not attuned to what this looks like yourself, it's hard to teach it. And I'll give you a personal example. I remember my oldest son coming through, and my younger son is talking about girls. And when you're with them and you like one, you know, how do you pick up on some of that stuff? And I was trying to describe to them, like, if you're going to kiss a girl for the first time, what you do is you look at their eyes and then you look at their lips, and you look at their eyes, you look at the lips, eyes, look, and they start to reciprocate. Then they're open to it. If they don't, it's not there. There's no spoken words that's going on here, but that's the body language that would invite you to something like that. And my sense is, just using that illustration, is sometimes people with ADHD, because a lot of times naturally you just pick up on that stuff and you're kind of oblivious. It's just your intuition and you just feel it and you kind of go with it. But a lot of these, sometimes these kids are oblivious to it. And as a parent, it's really kind of hard to identify that maybe something like what I just described is actually there, because you're not even paying attention to. And that's why it's sometimes helpful to go get some help. So with all that, BC, you want to just comment on that a little bit? Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense, and I think that there's, you know, you have to be tuned in, right? And when you're tuned in, you notice different things. But absolutely, you know, look, I'm all about teaching parents how to coach their kids through social issues. It's sort of my thing.
Yep.
But I also know that there's some kids who really benefit from groups, and you can do both, you know.
Yep.
And I think that as a parent, though, you're on the front lines, and you're the one who is explaining things, and you're the one at the barbecue when the kid isn't tuned in, and they kind of do some things that are socially unacceptable, and you're there when they don't notice what we call society's hidden rules, right, and they don't have self-awareness. So, you know, all that stuff is really hard, and I think the more that kids and adults can work on being tuned in and pausing to pay attention to these small nuances, because it's really nuanced, right? It's not just
yep.
The social cues. It's really that as people, there's sort of a nuanced level to it. And to your point about the kissing example, which is a good example, you know, one of the things I find with kids is sometimes they don't notice levels of friendship and intimacy, that
mm-hmm.
somebody saying, "Hey, how are you?" doesn't mean they want to come to your birthday party and be your best friend. And that's
mm-hmm.
really hard and painful, because my little people are left out, and
yep.
they really want people to come to their birthday party, and I want people to come to their birthday party. But we have to work on those nuances and
mm-hmm.
you know, the signals and the images, and what do these signals mean, and kind of
mm-hmm.
you know, become a person who interprets them. And it takes a lot of work, but you know, my first thing would be to share with parents that idea of demonstration, because that's really important.
Yep, yep. Well, there's a theme of that, demonstrating and showing and these nuances. And again, I just want to emphasize that some of this is body language and being able to pick up on some of that stuff. It's more social attention. It's a little bit more difficult. But needless to say, I do want to do a sequel to the show where we get into a little bit more tactical stuff, particularly some of the things that you do, Caroline, with some parents. And by the way, everyone, Caroline's got some webinars coming out to kind of speak to some of this stuff. If you're interested, go to anycoaching.com. I got that right, Caroline?
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
But one of the things that I also want to kind of talk about is, as I'm learning more about social issues, challenges, anxiety, it's almost like a comorbid condition, because some with ADHD don't have a problem with this and some do. And, you know, you've interviewed Dr. Roberto Olivardia on ADHD and dyslexia. I've interviewed him on ADHD and OCD. I've interviewed him on ADHD and bipolar. And one of those things that happens is typically somebody gets diagnosed with something first and then they latch onto that label and they never get diagnosed for anything else after that, because everything falls within that gap. And more, I'm starting to sense that those with ADHD are getting diagnosed maybe 12 or 13 with ADHD, but the social stuff doesn't resonate until later, but it's really not recognized and kind of not addressed. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's really important. You know, one of the things I would say, you know, to parents just to have in their mind is most social skills evaluations are about social communication and language. Well, a lot of our kids have vocabularies that would knock your socks off. They can tell you things, but they are not necessarily taking action on them. And my quote of the day around that is that a little boy said earlier, "I know what I'm supposed to do, but I can't make my body do it." And I thought it was just the cutest thing I've ever heard, because it's just such a good description of how we are.
Yep.
But, you know, statistically, the NIH says that about 56% of kids diagnosed with ADHD do not have reciprocal friends, meaning if they can't name two close friends that reciprocate with them, they go over their house, they come back over the other house, they have play dates with them, which breaks my heart. And I think the other stat to know is that 52% of kids diagnosed with ADHD are rejected by peers, which again is a very sad statistic, compared to 35% of their neurotypical peers. And I think the big thing about this is, I think often, you know, if you don't have a behavioral problem, in other words, you don't act out, you don't cause trouble, the stats are that those kids with ADHD don't really get the social help because they're not making waves. But, you know, it's really sad to me to go through life without having friends.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a life skill to interpret these cues. I mean, your boss is going to make a frown at you, and you need to be able to pay attention to that. So I think absolutely what happens is a lot of the kids with ADHD don't get diagnosed with any kind of social implication, or it's just not on the radar of practitioners in schools.
Well, we need to run a break real quick, but you know, I think we both agree it was said best. I think you were interviewing Dr. Olivardia, or I don't know what it was, but he says we live in our society is a wait to fail system. And if you're doing okay, it gets brushed aside until you fail. And it's unfortunate, because if you get diagnosed with ADHD and you have some of these social issues, they're really waiting for you to fail before they show up. So I want to kind of continue this conversation a little bit more in depth after the break. Everybody, learn more about Caroline, go to anycoaching.com. Go there, check out the webinars that are coming up. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing? Get the wrong solution. Misunderstand attention and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to Attention Talk Radio. We're having another great conversation about attention, only we're talking about social attention and those with ADHD picking up social cues and clues. And Caroline, just not to beat a dead horse, but I kind of keep coming back to this a little bit because it's fascinating to me because this shows so much about paying attention to attention. My older son got involved in college and started learning about handshakes and the body language around it. And there's so much communication that takes place in a handshake. There's actually a whole book about handshakes and what they communicate. And the upper hand is actually a true story is if you have the upper hand, it's an area of dominance. And I've actually seen TV shows where with presidents and stuff and leaders, how they're jockeying for position. And you read so much in the body language. And these are social cues and social clues as to what's kind of going on there's nothing that's spoken here, but you have to be attuned into that, pick that stuff up. And many of us most naturally are, we feel it with our intuition or we feel it with our gut, but I think many of those with ADHD are lacking some of that stuff and they take it for granted. So I think this is tough space because since it's not words, it's kind of hard to identify some of that stuff that you pick up. So anyway, I just think that this subject is, as you know, I love attention. It's getting more fascinating to me all the time. So we've got somebody with some social anxiety and some social issues. And what I'm hearing you say, Caroline, is when you're working with somebody on this, is the first thing you do is begin to help identify the behavior. And I think you recommend a behavioral log. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Well, one of the things that I suggest parents do, and it's a little bit harder with teenagers, but and part of my program that's in Why Will No One Play With Me is to do what's called a behavioral observation log. And I have a structure, and I'm happy to send this to any listeners who want to have it. And what it is it's really just observing what goes on, for instance, on play dates, and what time of day works and what time of day doesn't work. There's two types of play. We cover this with Kirsten Milliken. Structured play, which is more like, you know, you go to Chuck E. Cheese, or unstructured play, which is more you run around the backyard. And, you know, some kids do really poorly with unstructured play. If you're going to have a play date, it just does not work. So part of what I'm suggesting to parents is, you know, look at the executive functions, look at the behaviors, look at what goes on that's getting in the way. You know, is it, and look at across multiple environments multiple times. And the reason for this is that we all get ideas in our head, and sometimes those ideas are not really accurate. And what we want to do is figure out, you know, sometimes kids have really hard times with playing with other kids, but only at certain times a day, only certain playmates. And, you know, only because the kid doesn't have the same interests. So what you really want to do is try to set the kid up for success. When you know that, you also get a better sense of what's going on. Is this about attention or is this about impulse? You know, within attention, is this about reading social cues? What is it that's going on? Because, or is the kid unaware of their actions? Because I think then you have a much better chance of sort of narrowing down, because like nobody can change everything at once, right? So the more you can sort of hone in on something to work on, the better off you are. You can't ask the kid to work on every social aspect at once. It's just too hard. So the observation log is just something that I've done with parents for a long time, so we can kind of look at what's going on, what's getting in the way.
I can't help but say that social log is all about, it's a scientific way to document stuff and make observations and look for patterns. Because as you described what you were talking about, I've done interviews with Wilma Feldman on adults and career placement, and she talks about, you know, energy levels at different times of day and matching that up with your work environment. And I'm throwing that in there because you might make that observation that certain times of day are difficult, or it could even be plays more of an issue or social issues are when medications are wearing off at different times of day. But that log is that thing to record that data to back up and pause and say, hey, what's kind of going on here? It doesn't tell it to you, but you by writing that log, the idea is to let it reveal itself to you. Is that an accurate reframing of what you said, or you want to make adjustments to that?
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And it's also something to, you know, it's absolutely that, and it's absolutely something to help parents do a little bit of sort of root cause patterns and diagnosis, because, you know, there's often sort of patterns, and, you know, we want to not go and accuse the kids because they can't get along with the next door neighbor. But, you know, if that's where the self-regulation issues come in, then that's what we need to work on going forward. And part of that working on it might be not playing with certain kids a little bit. And this is hard as parents. You know, part of what brought all this to my attention 12 years ago was that moms with kids and dads who are left out, it's hard on them because, you know, you want to be social. You want to go to a barbecue and enjoy yourself. But often, you know, you have to set the kid up for success. And if you put them in certain situations and they don't have the skills to navigate them, you know, you won't get a better result. You know, can I give one thing that I would say to parents, which is, you know, a lot of parents switch schools or switch camps when things aren't successful. So what I'm saying is look at the environment, but I'm not saying keep switching the kid from thing to thing, because honestly, if they don't have the skills, it's not the camp's fault. And it's, you know, so that's, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, maybe you tweak things and you work on certain skills based on the behavioral observation log.
So I think we're kind of hitting a natural break here, because I would like to do a sequel here. We talk a little bit more of the tactical things that you do. But just like any attention talk radio show, we love to pay attention to attention. I think it all really begins with awareness and some specificity in dissecting it. I think the takeaway here for a lot of our listeners, when it comes with when you have ADHD, there is the ability to pay attention or regulate attention, if you will. And we, so often Caroline and I are training people, just coaching people to just learn how to pause and notice what's kind of going on. But just because you pause doesn't mean that you're picking up on those social clues and know how to act on it. And so there's a certain amount of awareness that you can't homogenize this. There's one is the ability to regulate your attention, stop and pause. And the other one's the ability to recognize and pick up on those social clues. And I think to me, that's a little bit of a Swiss Army knife here, that we're making a demarcation that these are, it's a two-part process here. And the second part is, once you do that, it's my sense is when we do the other show, it's a lot about helping kids or adults become aware of what to look for and to recognize it in order for them to actually be in choice and do something about it. And a lot of this is really just, you know, understanding these differences, being able to look for it, come up with that log to look for those type of patterns so you can put yourself in a position to do something about it. So is anything you want to add to that, Caroline, or is that a reasonable summation of where we are?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely reasonable. And I think it's really important to understand that, you know, a lot of this is social problem solving, right? And so what we're trying to do as parents is figure out, is the problem attention? What's the problem within the executive function, impulsivity, shifting? Or is the problem that there's a lack of, you know, theory of mine, understanding other people's perspectives and interpreting those cues, even when they pause to pay attention. And I think if parents can figure that out, if you can figure it out about yourself, then it's just the place to start from. You know, it's like now I have, you know, awareness of what's going on, and I can figure out the more tactical pieces, which we can talk about in a sequel, after that. And it's not a judgment. There's not one that's better than the other. It's just you can't ask a kid to, you know, stop saying those things if they're not aware that what they're saying isn't something people want to hear.
I want to give that a pause because what you articulate was great, but I had a little aha a second ago when you said social problem solvers or social mm-hmm. problem solving. I had a flashback to seventh grade doing word problems in algebra. I mean, I was doing math, that was fine, but I was like, word problems, holy shit. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm like, oh my God, social problem solving is like doing word problems on steroids. I mean, I'm like, wow. And I think that I'm using that as an analogy here because this is not easy for those people out there that are trying to pull this stuff together. But first thing you have to is that awareness of what's kind of going on, and then model it and be able to work through practice problems in order to be able to navigate that. And Caroline, we hope we can have you back on to talk about some of the ways that you give practice problems to kids or adults in order to kind of help them solve these social problems. So anything last to be said that we haven't spoken before we sign off?
No, thank you so much, and absolutely have to practice, and practice makes better. And, you know, to parents out there, it's really tough, and everybody deserves to have friends. And a lot of the kids I've worked with are just such well-adjusted adults now because they worked on this. So don't lose heart, because I know there's moments where it's really, really hard to watch and really hard to navigate with kids, especially if they aren't as accepting of help. So just don't give up and don't lose heart.
And the one thing I will have to, I had a flashback when you were saying that, just is Rick Green of Totally ADD talks about when he was a kid, he was an outcast and really had a lot of social issues, and then it all kind of came together, and now he's totally got it together, like socially with regard to some of the things, and writes skit comedy, been doing it for like 30 years and very successful, a great advocate for those with ADHD. And so there is hope in this whole process. So it's just about doing the work and being diligent about. So Caroline, we can't wait to have you back on to get to some more details of what you do to work with people. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
No problem. Thank you.
Everybody, learn more about Caroline by going to necoaching.com. And with that, we'll catch you next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.